Welcome to One to Another with Dr. Pete Pavelic on today's edition of One to Another.
Don't wait till the very end to try to save it. But that's what we do. We wait until our finances are completely shot to sit down and do a budget. We wait until our spouse gives us the divorce papers to decide, hey, I'll go to marriage counseling. Don't do it. We wait until we have cancer or the heart doctor tells us we have congestive heart failure to modify our diet and start going to the gym. We wait until our life is totally in the gutter before we start paying attention to what the Bible says and reading it and going to church and joining Bible studies and things of that nature.
What does it mean to be prudent? In today's message, Pastor Pete will unpack this word and teach on its importance for the life of the believer. How often have you found yourself trying to scramble to repair a situation that could have been prevented had you been more prepared? This is where prudence comes in. It takes work to reach most destinations we desire, but a prudent life can help build the appropriate disciplines and habits. The Lord wants to empower you with the consistency to follow Him daily. If you'd like to connect with Pastor Pete or help support this program, go to onetoanotherradio.org. Now let's join Pastor Pete in the book of Proverbs, chapter 27, as he begins part one of his message, The Prudent Path.
Today I want to talk to you about a word that you probably don't use a whole lot in your vocabulary. It's a word, though, that comes up quite a bit in the book of Proverbs, and it's translated a couple of different ways, but I've chosen to go with the traditional translation, which is the word prudence, the path of prudence. So Proverbs 27. How many of you have ever struggled at something in life? Some of y'all struggled to get out of bed this morning, right? We've all struggled at some point, right? We've all had big struggles and little struggles. How many of you like to struggle? Nope, that's me too. I don't like to struggle. If you give me the choice between struggling or not struggling, I'm going to pick not struggling every single time if I can, right? Nobody wants to struggle. The only good thing about struggles and struggling is that we learn from our struggles. We might call it experience, but a lot of our experience comes from the times that we struggle. We tend to learn the most in life when we're struggling the most in life. How many of you have ever struggled through something and then you got to the end of that something and you said, you know what, if I ever do that again, I'm going to do it different. Or if I ever face a situation like that again, I know that I'm going to do this, this, and this because I want to minimize my struggle, right? We learn from our struggles. I've had a lot of struggles in my life, just like each and every one of you. My life isn't perfect. I've had struggles in pretty much every area of my life at one time or another. I've struggled relationally. I've struggled financially. I've struggled physically. I've had emotional struggles in my life. I've struggled with God. I've struggled with the Lord. I've had to wrestle with God on things on occasion. I have kids. I don't want to make them sound like they're bad kids. I know sometimes I make jokes about them being monsters and stuff, but they're really good kids. I have really, really four incredible kids. But there have been struggles. It's part of having kids, isn't it? I have a great wife. We have a great marriage. But we've had struggles in our marriage. I don't think anybody gets to be married very long without struggling. If you want to struggle, just get married. I hear people all the time, oh, we're going to get married and things are going to be great. I'm like, you don't know what marriage is. If there was a picture of struggle, it would be by the word marriage in the dictionary. It's going to be a struggle. We have struggles. But looking back on my life, I really feel like most of my struggles have been minimized because I learned the value of prudence at a very, very young age. I'm going to tell you a story I haven't told many people. In fact, I don't think I've told more than two or three people this story. It's not a story that makes me look bad. It's not something where I did anything wrong. It's kind of a scary story, to be honest. I started flying airplanes when I was 16 years old, started taking flying lessons. And I started out like most pilots, flying a Cessna 150. If you don't know anything about Cessna 150s, it's like the smallest little airplane, not the smallest, they're smaller, but it's kind of the smallest general aviation airplane people train in. It's a little two-seater. It's not big, doesn't go fast, doesn't have a lot of power, but it's cheap. And it's cheap to fly, doesn't burn a whole lot of gas. And like many young pilots, whenever you first start training, the most difficult thing, the thing you tend to struggle with the most, is landing. And there's a landing called a crosswind landing, where the wind is not coming towards you, which is the way you prefer it as a pilot, but it's coming across the runway. And I had done a couple of crosswind landings. I probably had 8 to 10 hours at this point in my flying career, not very many. And I'd actually soloed on a very calm day. I'd been up by myself already and had gotten my solo sign off and was feeling pretty good. But on this day, I went out to the airport for my training session, and it was windy. I mean, crazy windy. It was right at the operational limits of a Cessna 150 for crosswinds. I remember my instructor and I talking about it. And I said, man, I think it's kind of windy. Maybe we shouldn't go today. And he said, nah, it's a good day for training. Okay. So we talked about crosswind landings, how to do it. We reviewed all the techniques, how to crab into the wind, you know, how to straighten up and dip your wing and flare and all the stuff that goes with the crosswind landing. And then we decided we were going to go do it. And all through the pre-flight, my instructor is telling me, just remember, if things go bad, just go around. If it doesn't look good, just go around. If you don't like what you're seeing, just go around. You know, you've always got that option to go around. So we go out, we get in the airplane, and we taxi out, we do our run-ups, and right before we're getting ready to take off, he said, hey, just remember, if you don't like it, just go around. Okay, great. So, man, we take off. Man, it was bumpy. It was just blowing us everywhere. And we turned, and we came back on the downwind, and we turned and went base and turned for final, and we were getting bumped around, and I was having a really hard time just flying straight and level. And I knew this was going to be a rough landing. I mean, it was a turbulent day. And when I turned on to final, I overshot it. I waited too long to turn, and so I had to tighten my turn up, which meant I had to pull back, which meant I got slow. You don't want to get slow, particularly when you're down low. And I got slow, not too slow, but I knew I got slow, so I pushed the nose over, and I shallowed my bank up to get a little bit of speed back. But because I'd overshot the runway, I had to correct. And when I did that, I overcorrected, and so I had to correct. And so I'm kind of doing this, searching for the runway. And I was slow, so I had to push the nose down to get some speed. And when I did that, and while I was trying to find the runway, I got low. Not too low, not like we're going to go into the trees low, but too low for the glide slope. And so because of that, I added some power, and I pulled up, and I'm still trying to get everything straightened out. And I thought, you know what, I think I can do this. The whole approach was a mess. I mean, it was a mess. It was a mess from the moment we took off. I was all over the place. And I remember we came over the fence, and I was still slow, and I was still low. And we came over the fence, but I thought, I can do this. I can land this airplane. And if I can just land it, we can get out, and I'm getting out of this thing. Because it was just a miserable day to fly. And I remember looking out the window and seeing pavement underneath me, which I thought, hey, this is a good sign. We're over the runway. Just put it down. And then right at that moment when I transitioned up and just got ready to touch it down, this huge gust of wind came from our right. And I mean, it literally just kind of picked us up and just moved us. And I remember glancing out the window and seeing grass and thinking, well, we're not over the runway anymore. Probably shouldn't touch down here. So I pulled up a little bit, trying to figure out what to do. And then I looked back out the window and I see an airplane hangar in front of us because it had pushed us over to the left. And if you know about our airport, that's where all the hangars are. And just then I hear in my headset the instructor yelling, go around, go around, go around. So I crammed the power in as fast as I could and I started to pull up and the stall warning horn started going off. And when an airplane stalls, y'all, I know you hear this on the news all the time, but people talk about the engine stalling. It's not the engine, it's the wings. When an airplane stalls, the wings stop flying. It makes you fall out of the sky. That's why you don't want to stall. And the stall warning horn is going off, which means you have to push the nose over, but the ground isn't far away, and there's a hangar in front of us. And I'm telling y'all, some of y'all have weed eaters with more power than a Cessna 150. I mean, this little thing is just trying its best, but it just doesn't have a lot of juice behind it. And I had pushed the power in so hard that I had flooded the engine a little bit. And about a second or two after I pushed the power in, it coughed, what we call coughing. It kind of sputtered like it was going to die. And my heart stopped and his heart stopped. And right at that moment, he said, "My airplane." I said, "Your airplane. Have it." "You bet it is." And he was able to push the nose over and get us enough speed. And he was calm and cool and collected. And we got a little speed and he pulled up and we cleared. We flew right over the top of the hangars. To me, it felt like we were just 4 or 5 feet over the hangars. I'm sure it was 30 or 40 feet by the time we got to them. But it was a pretty scary little day. We got up to altitude and he said, "Well, do you want to go back and continue practicing landings or do you want to practice some navigation today?" And I said, "Navigation, please." And he said, "Great, take me to Hondo." So I got my charts out, and I plotted a course, I tuned in a VOR, and we flew over to Hondo. Now, the thing about Hondo is, it was windy in Hondo, too, this day, but Hondo has multiple runways. They face different directions, and so we were able to just pick a runway that had the wind going right down the runway. Made a great landing in Hondo. We taxied over to the little FBO. We got out. Went in, I cleaned my britches, and kind of caught our breath. And then we sat down and we started kind of talking about what had happened. And I'll never forget, my instructor didn't critique my landing. He didn't critique my technique. He didn't say, "Hey, if you would have done this, this would have been better. If you would have done that, that would have been better." He started with a question. And he said, "Do you know what the difference between a wise man and a fool is?" And I said, "No, probably not." And he said this, and I'll never forget it. He said, "A wise man does at the beginning what a fool only does at the end." He said, "What you did was foolish. You had every opportunity to go around. You knew from the start of that approach when you overshot the runway, it was a bad approach. You knew when you got slow the first time, it was a bad approach. You knew when you were low, it was a bad approach. And you just kept going." He said, "A wise person does at the beginning what a fool only does at the end." He said, "You're in an airplane. Go around. Make a second approach." He said, "We flew over here to Hondo, and we picked a better runway, and we landed." And you know, to add insult to injury, about an hour later, we flew back to Pleasanton, and the wind was calm. It was all gone. And he said again, he said, "See, you could have just stayed up there above the airport. You had 4 hours of fuel. You could have just waited for the wind to be better." Right? The wise do at the beginning what the fool waits till the end to do. I think a lot of us are going through life kind of like that. We're just trying to land it. We're trying to make it work. We're trying to save it. We want to prove we can. And we get ourselves in these messes where we've got a bunch of bad options. It's not always easy to land an airplane. Sometimes it's a real struggle. And it's not always easy to live your life. Sometimes it's a real struggle, but if you're prudent, if you're wise, you're going to have a lot better chance of surviving. Don't wait till the very end to try to save it. But that's what we do. We wait until our finances are completely shot to sit down and do a budget. We wait until our spouse gives us the divorce papers to decide, "Hey, I'll go to marriage counseling." Don't do it. We wait until we have cancer or the heart doctor tells us we have congestive heart failure to modify our diet and start going to the gym. We wait until our life is totally in the gutter before we start paying attention to what the Bible says and reading it and going to church and joining Bible studies and things of that nature. Proverbs 15:24 says, "For the prudent, the path of life leads upward." I think that's what we all want. We want a path that leads upward. We want a path that leads to a good place. Prudence is the key to that. Proverbs 27:12, our text for today, says this: "The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it." The big idea for you is simply this: seek the prudent path or you will walk the painful path. Seek the prudent path or you will walk the painful path. I've got two things for you today, two things prudent people do, two things we should all be doing. But here's the first one. It's this: the prudent are able to perceive. The prudent have the ability to realistically perceive what's in front of them. You might say, well, the prudent think, or the prudent consider, or the prudent weigh their options, or the prudent reason, or the prudent are able to examine and evaluate their circumstances. You can say this in a lot of ways, but the bottom line is prudent people are able to realistically ponder and think about and consider what's in front of them. And I want to be specific here, because the word realistic is important. Because I see a lot of people who think they're prudent, but they're not prudent because they leave out that one key part of prudence, which is being realistic. Many people see the danger, they think about the problem, but they do it, as the old saying goes, with rose-colored glasses. They don't really like, I'll give you some examples, they don't really like the way the guy they're dating treats them. They don't like the way he talks to them. But he's cute. And he's got money. So they put up with it. They make excuses for it. Pastor, I know she's not a Christian. I know her family are agnostic or atheist. But Pastor, she's a 10, man. She is so stinking hot. And I had a vision from the Lord. I'm going to be the one to save her whole family. They call that missionary dating. It doesn't work. It's been proven not to work time and time again. They're in debt up to their eyeballs. But a couple goes out on a Saturday afternoon and they come home with a $100,000 brand new SUV. And I go past them and I say, hey, nice new vehicle. That's a cool car. Oh, yeah. You know, we didn't want to do it, but had to. That other SUV we had, it was killing us on gas mileage. This one right here, 1.5 miles a gallon better than that last one. Mm-hmm. Yep, so much better. Got 4.99% interest on it. Thing's going to pay for itself in 300 years. I mean, it was a no-brainer. 1.5 extra miles a gallon? Grandma and Grandpa both died of lung cancer. Mama's got emphysema. But you think smoking's okay. It's not going to hit you the way it did them, because you only smoke half a pack a day, and they all smoked a whole pack a day. Listen, there's nothing illegal about dating somebody who doesn't treat you right. There's nothing illegal about dating somebody who's not a Christian, not a believer. There's nothing illegal about going out and getting you another car loan or smoking cigarettes. But there's also nothing prudent about it. If you're really realistically looking at it, there's nothing prudent about it. You see, the path of prudence starts with the ability to realistically perceive whatever it is you're looking at. Verse 12 says, the prudent sees danger. They can see it. They have a level of perception in their lives that gives them the eyes to see and the ears to hear and to know when danger is about. They perceive it, they ponder it, they consider what they're going to do about it. They recognize and they realize at the beginning what only the fool sees at the end. If I'm being honest with you, the problem many people face today is not that they can't see the problems or the struggles related to the path that they're on. It's much worse than that. The problem is that they don't want to see the problem. Just like when I was trying to land that airplane, I didn't want to admit I couldn't do it. I didn't want to admit that I was on a bad path. I didn't want to be embarrassed in front of my instructor and make it look like I wasn't a good pilot. I wanted to land. And instead, I almost crashed. See, many people today are in the same boat. They're on a similar path. They know that the behavior issues they're facing with their children right now while they're young are issues, but they don't want to admit it. So they justify it, they excuse it, they ignore it, they pretend like it's not an issue. But the path they're on is a bad one. People know their marriage is in trouble, but they don't want to admit it. So they just get on social media and keep posting those perfect pictures that make it look like life is grand for them. When you ask them how they're doing, they say everything is great. But I'm telling you, when they look out the window, they see danger. They see a hangar ahead. They see a crash coming. But they want to pretend like it's not there. It's the same with money. debt's crushing American families today. One study found that the average American between the ages of 30 and 50 has $27,000 in non-mortgage debt. So for a married couple, that'd be $54,000 of non-mortgage debt. The same study found that on average, an American family spends 27% of their income, their family's income, paying the minimum and the interest on their non-mortgage debt. Over a quarter of their income is just to pay for interest and the minimum payments they have to on all their non-mortgage debt. But we just keep spending and spending and spending like it's no problem at all. And you know what? When it finally overwhelms us, we think, man, you know, if I could go back 5 years or 10 years, or man, if I could go back to when I was 20 and start again, I wouldn't have taken all that debt on. I wouldn't have signed up for that. I wouldn't have gotten a new car every 3 years. Now, I would have done it completely different. Remember what my instructor said? A wise man does at the beginning what a fool does at the end. I can't tell you how many young people I've met that say something like this to me. Well, Pastor, if I knew he was going to get me pregnant, I would have never moved in with him. Now, a prudent person could perceive that when you move in with somebody before you're married and you sleep with them on a regular basis, you might just end up having a baby. These are not mysteries of the universe. Or I hear young people say, well, she's not a Christian, Pastor, but boy, she's good looking. Or he doesn't treat me well, he treats me like trash, but you know how much money his family has? You see, a prudent person isn't impressed by those things. A prudent person doesn't fall into those traps. They do at the beginning what the fool does at the end. They say, bye-bye. See you later. See, if we want to be prudent people and have a positive outcome and walk a positive path toward a destination in our future, we have to have the ability to realistically perceive what we're looking at. To realistically perceive the path we're on.
You've been listening to Pastor Pete on One to Another. It's truly a blessing for him to bring the Word of God to those who live nearby, as well as those who live further away. That's the beauty of radio ministry. You might not live nearby, but you feel connected through the radio messages. Pastor Pete is touching on concepts that have to do with staying on the path that God has for you, for your best. In the Bible, it says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." What does that look like practically? Essentially, as you look into God's word for answers, He enlightens your eyes and your mind to seeing and understanding Him more and more. Imagine how lost you'd be if you were on that path in the dark with no direction. That's how the majority of this world is right now, blindly trying to find their way, but no light in sight. Thankfully, we know that God is the one who illumines our hearts and our lives. Thank goodness we have Him to look to and His Word to guide us. Would you be interested in some resources that could help you in your walk with God? If so, Pastor Pete has just the thing at his website, onetoanotherradio.org. Pastor Pete has written several books that could be such a helpful addition to your reading library. Feel free to browse the various books he's written, and you can order them right from our website. Once more, that's onetoanotherradio.org. As you're learning more about this ministry, Gwen's here to fill you in on a few more things. Take it away, Gwen.
Thanks, Phil. Did you know that Pastor Pete loves to hear from our listeners? He personally answers as many emails as he can. So if you have something you'd like to share about what you're learning here on One to Another, we invite you to do so. More than likely, you'll hear back from Pastor Pete himself. Go to onetoanotherradio.org and look for the About tab, then click on Contact, and you can submit what you're learning. You can also find out the places that Pastor Pete is teaching and the events he has planned in the upcoming months. Who knows? Maybe you'll have an opportunity to meet Pastor Pete at one of these events. While you're at our website, you'll notice a Donate tab. If you'd like to contribute to this ministry in a financial way, we'd be so grateful. For any new donors this month, we'll send you a gift of the month. Just go to onetoanotherradio.org to learn more.
Thanks, Gwen. That's all we have for today's edition. But join us again for One to Another.